Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. 34 after. Thank you very much for spending some time with us today. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. And the article this week is called Deflation. It's actually titled Deflation 2003, and it's where I revisit the issue of the possibility of deflation. Again, something that our guest this hour knows a little bit about, although we're probably not going to talk about it much. Maybe a little bit, though, a little bit later on. His name is Michael Cox. He's our good friend. He's Vice President, Senior Vice President, and Chief Economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Couldn't do without him. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back, as always. Another outstanding annual report. Congratulations.
What I've been wanting to do for a long time. What's more important than trade? I mean, you know, trade is something we started doing as a child.
Well, it's not. And it's something that Og did with Gork, you know, 20,000 years ago or 100,000 years ago, depending on how far back you want to go. It's fundamental. You're exactly right. Well, folks, before we get into the trade thing, I just want to remind you something I've been saying now for a long time. If you need to get on the mailing list of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. Now, Mike, I know you don't want a million people to sign up because you guys have to put extra budget money in your budget for the printing. But folks, you need to go. By the way, you can go online at dallasfed.org, and you can get this, the whole report online. You can go get different articles, and you can print it out in text on your computer. You can also get it as a PDF, but you can also order a copy. And this is outstanding. The title of this year's, of the 2002 annual report for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas is The Fruits of Free Trade. And Michael, as you know, I'm a major proponent of free trade, of trade among countries, among people. And I really love what Bastiat said about this 150 years ago. He said, when goods cross borders, armies don't.
You know, you say you're a proponent of it, and it's interesting. Every one of us, as a consumer, is a big supporter of free trade.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we go to our jobs, where we produce our living, we become protectionists, and we don't want anybody to compete with us. We want to shut out foreign competition. We want to shut out even competition from other states or other suppliers. So
it's human nature, isn't it?
It's the huge battle. It's this constant ongoing battle between us, me and you, as producers and as consumers. We wage war as producers against ourselves as consumers.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and, you know, the people who don't like the fact that their clothes are, you know, that their job is in the textile industry is either gone or is in jeopardy. But they complain if the broccoli is 10 cents extra a pound.
Right. And in fact, you brought up the clothing industry. That's the most protected industry in America in terms of jobs saved. We save thousands of jobs there, but it costs hundreds of thousands, but it costs us an average of $169,000 per job saved. If we were to try to save all jobs in America that way, it would cost three times the nation's gross national product.
One of the best examples of how protectionism is a mistake was recently when President Bush tried to protect the U.S. steel industry. Michael, you probably have got better numbers on this, but I'm just going to say the ones I know, and hopefully if you know some better ones, you can correct me. But these are round numbers, folks, but approximately 12,000 steel jobs were saved or were benefited by the President Bush, the one we have right now, Bush 43, his protection of the steel industry. But it hurt about 2.5 million steel jobs of people who work with steel, not create steel, but they work with steel products.
Right. It's very selfish, of course, objective, because if you help the U.S. steel industry, you hurt downstream steel consuming industries like automobiles, making our cars more expensive because the steel costs more, and then it makes our cars not competitive on world markets.
It ripples, doesn't it?
Right, and if you take, we don't want to import cheap Canadian lumber. That is, I mean, as consumers, of course, we do, but our producers, competing producers, don't want to, so they have protectionist acts against lumber, which helps them but hurts the home building industry. We don't want to let foreign sugar in here, even though typical American pays about $42 for 100 pounds of sugars. The world price is less than $10. So we pay four times. The world price of sugar, 100 pounds, is $9.87.
Wow.
We pay $42. Now, that helps our sugar industry. It makes them rich, but it hurts the downstream candy industry,
right,
soft drink industry, which complain vociferously. But the sugar industry has got a louder voice in Congress. They pay more money.
The tension is between the consumer and the producer, and it has been for a long time. We're going to talk some more about this, about free trade, the importance of free trade, right after these messages with our good friend Michael Cox with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. It's 20 Till. Stay with us. Back, 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me tell you about our show coming up straight ahead. First up is going to be me. I've got, in the next show, I'm going to talk to you for just a little while about some things I've got on my mind, including what I'm going to be doing next week. And I'm excited about it. I'm going to be going to Stockholm, Sweden for a week, and I'm going to talk about that, and that's coming up. In the next show, I'll tell you a little bit about that, what I'm going to be doing over there. And then after that, we're going to be talking with a guy who's been on the show before named Jack Mitchell. He's written a book called Hug Your Customers. You're really going to enjoy it. Jack's got a lot of energy, and he's got an important message. And he is not an author by profession, folks. He is a business owner, just like you and me. But he's got a story to tell, and he's been successful hugging his customers over the years. And we're going to get him to talk to us about that. And then after that, we're going to be visiting with Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And then on Friday, I will be in Washington, D.C., broadcasting from the National Taxpayers Conference. And I'm looking forward to that. That's coming up all the rest of this week. Michael Cox is our guest. He's with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, vice president and chief economist there. Michael, give us some numbers. You've got some outstanding, some interesting numbers here in your annual report this year on the fact that the U.S. is still the greatest exporter, even though we have a trade deficit.
We are the largest exporting nation in the world. We just import a lot too as consumers, but we also export some of the ownership of our companies and stuff because foreigners want to invest in America. We're the best place.
In 2001, if I'm not mistaken here, you said that we imported, was it $1.6 trillion? 1.6 in 2001.
We sold $1.3 trillion to the rest of the world.
We sold, but we imported
$1.6.
So we got a $300 billion trade deficit.
Right.
So when you put it in those terms, though, it's not that ugly, is it?
No, it's not. When you think about it the way you ought to think about it, which is that the trade balance and the capital account balance have to equal each other. So if you go over to the other side and think about the capital account. The capital account is where it is a net result of the foreigners wanting to buy and invest in America minus how much Americans want to invest abroad. Mm-hmm. If foreigners want to invest over here more than we want to invest over there, we're going to have a capital account surplus, and by definition, we'll have a trade account deficit. So it's really, it's actually a sign that the rest of the world regards the United States as the most healthy, vibrant, profitable, best economy in the world.
You know, Michael, I went back in March to Washington to moderate a panel for the U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Zoller's group. They had a group of small business representatives from five South African countries, actually. South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Swaziland, and another one. I've forgotten the name of it. Anyway, we have a trade deficit with all of them. That was so interesting when mm-hmm. I was doing a little research on that. Here's this little bitty Swaziland. It's just a little island of a country in the middle of South Africa, and we actually have a trade deficit with them. We're importing more from them than we're exporting to them.
When you go to the grocery store and you go to the food aisle, let's say the produce aisle, where you're standing there with your card open, reaching around buying different kinds of fruit, you're buying tangerines from South Africa. You're getting apples from New Zealand, apricots from China, bananas from Ecuador, blackberries come from mainly from Canada, blueberries from Chile, coconuts from the Philippines, grapefruit from the Bahamas, grapes, the number one importing country is Peru, kiwi fruit comes from Italy, and so on. I mean, you're shopping the globe right there because those grocery stores have gone out and found the best price for those products in many cases or abroad or variety. You know, the Fuji apples come from Japan and so on. So, you know, this is the way the American consumer can stand there and take their budget and make it, you know, go far enough to get the fruit and vegetables and products that they need. The entire grocery store is the most marvelous experience in free trade in the world.
But, you know, Mike, when I go to other countries and I go to their grocery stores and I do that, that's a very interesting thing to do, by the way, folks. If you ever go to another country, go to their grocery stores. I don't see that kind of representation in their stores.
Right. Well, in America, if you open up a can of mixed nuts, every nut in that can comes from a different country.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Michael, let's talk about the word globalization. Is that a lightning rod word now?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And there's basically nuts who turn this whole thing up into the idea that there's something wrong with Americans shopping the globe. Now, you know, the thing about it is, if you look at your automobile, that's an example of an industry which is highly globalized in order to produce you a car the most efficiently and best. There's 768 motor vehicles in operation around the globe, not quite a three-fourths of a billion cars being driven all over the world. Those cars are produced by 200 companies and 741 assembly plants in 508 cities and 59 countries. It's all mixed up. Ford produces more cars in 17 countries. General Motors exports more cars from Germany than does BMW. Hmm. Half of all Toyotas and three-fourths of all Hondas that we sell in America are built here. The Honda Civic is 75% domestic content, but the Ford Escort is only 60%. So the message in all this is that it's a highly globalized and competitive auto industry, and that's the way you get consumers the cars that they want at the cheapest possible price. So, you know, globalization is the way we deliver products to the consumer that they can, you know, they can afford. It's a matter of making your budget go as far as possible.
You know, Mike, as you know, the global economy is a little bit tough right now. And one of the things that makes me believe that we could be headed for a long-term global prosperity is the advent of free trade, more free trade around the globe. I think we've got, and the opposite of that was the Smoot-Hawley situation that happened 70 years ago to help create the Great Depression. I want you to comment on that when we come back right after these messages. It's 10 till. Stay with us. We will be right back with Michael Cox, the chief economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. And Michael Cox, who's our guest, has a website. His website is dallasfed.org, dallasfed.org. And I really want you, Michael, I really thank you for making this, your annual report, available in little downloadable nuggets or viewable nuggets. Even though you can order a copy of the hard copy like I have, which I've got a collection of these folks, and they're very valuable to me. But you can go on the website and click on the free trade link there on the right on their website at dallasfed.org, and you can, they actually break down the individual sections of the report and talk in each one of the sort of the chapters of the report, and you can get it there in bite sizes. You can download it individual one. None of them are so long you couldn't read them right on the screen. So the information that Mike and I are talking about, it's all right there on the website, and I really encourage you to check it out. Michael, you had a couple of thoughts that you wanted to follow up on what I had just said.
Well, you said things are tough out there. And when people hear that, of course, the instant reaction is, oh, something's wrong. The economy's going through a tough period. Something's wrong with it. Well, the truth is that competition is what makes things tough, and competition is the good force. Yes. Competition is not ruinous. Competition makes us stronger. How fast could we run the mile today if we didn't compete?
That's right.
And the spelling bee. How good could we spell if we didn't compete? Make a product. You know, every company needs competition to make sure they can make their product as good as possible. And what happened during the 1920s is we went the opposite direction of competition. We went to protection. Protection makes you weaker. and not stronger. Competition what makes you stronger. We started in September of 1929, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average was at 381, which had been a high for the period. And then following that high, we started a round of protectionist acts in America to protect 5,000 industries against foreign competition. The result of it was that the Dow, 4 years later, had fallen from 381 to 41. That's a 90% decline in the well-being of the nation because we left the era of competition and went to an era of protection. Now, most recently in America, and we've kind of gone the other direction, we trade a lot more. We have new rounds of general agreements and tariffs and trade, World Trade Organization and stuff. Trade has expanded, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gone up with it, but we're starting to get back into protectionism again.
What's that looking like?
It's, you know, we...
I mean, who's, wh- how is that, what does that look like when you say we're getting back into protection?
Well, it looks like things like we filed 300 anti-dumping claims against foreign products. Anytime a company sells a product in this nation for more than they sell it abroad, there's an anti-dumping claim filed. And it's being filed by producers in America of every product, from, you know, roses to steel and everything. So, you know, what it looks like is a bunch of insidious laws which will never be undone, countervailing duties, anti-dumping claims, voluntary export restraints, quality and labeling and packaging restrictions. There's a movement underway to label every piece of fruit in this country and every potato so that when you go to the store, you'll know exactly where it came from, what country.
Wow.
Then, of course, step two is to then make you mad at that country for something they did, like French fries, name them.
Right.
And so we don't buy French products, we don't buy products from Ecuador, don't buy products from anywhere because we're mad at the country for something.
And remember this, folks, when goods cross borders, armies don't.
Exactly.
And, when and you know, if we, the thing I've said, that free trade is one of the best things, and obviously I wasn't the first to say this, one of the best things that could happen to create peace around the world. Because if I trade with somebody, if I do business with somebody in another country, and I know them, you know, I'm going to be less likely to hate them.
It was free trade and information which brought down the Iron Curtain. When the rest of the world got fax machines and eventually cell phones in the early mid 1980s and things, and means of communicating with the rest of the world that that Russians couldn't stop, the game was over for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like people were no longer behind the veil of ignorance.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to look at what free, what not having free trade did, look at Russia. I mean, they, Mr. Greenspan had to go over there a few years ago and explain to them the concept of a bank.
Yes, that everything in the economy was broken. Every labor market was broken. They were afraid of people losing their jobs, so folks had the jobs that they had 60 years ago.
Absolutely,
same jobs in the country.
Mike, there's so much. This is such a rich report that you've created for us. I know how much work goes into this. I know I really appreciate the fact that you guys produce a quality document with this kind of information. Thank you so much for making it available to us for free. That's an outstanding service that you provide for us. And we got more to come, more to talk about. You're going to come back in the future, and we're going to talk some more about free trade, aren't we?
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Mike. Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen, with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every single member of our military standing a post around the world on our behalf. God bless you. God be with you. We are so proud of you. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.